If you have a daughter, you know or have heard that the teen years can be tough. Teen girls are enigmas, and parenting them can make you feel like you're losing your mind some days. On this episode of Brainy Moms, Terry and I interview teen life coach, Sherry Gazit. Coach Sherry talked to us about some difficult topics that parents and teens face, like friendship issues, why friends are so important to them, social media and perfection, and why teen girls pull away from their moms. She shares the importance of knowing their love language and even gives us some insights into the science of the teenage mind. Her specialty is teen girls, but this episode is relevant for parents of teen boys as well. We can't wait for you to hear from her. Hi, and welcome to this episode of Brainy Moms. I'm Dr. Amy Moore, here with my co-host, Terry Miller, coming to you today from Colorado Springs, Colorado. We're excited to introduce our guest to you today. She is Coach Sherry Gazit. Coach Sherry is dedicated to helping teens and parents through difficult ups and downs of adolescence. In addition to advocating for teen mental wellness by advising foundations, appearing on TV and radio shows, and writing for magazines, Coach Sherry also provides private coaching for teen girls and their parents who need help finding their inner joy, taming stress, claiming their confidence, and navigating friendships. Her latest program is the MomWise Club, which is a supportive group for moms of middle and high school girls.
So glad you're here, Sherry.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, hey, before we dig into all the good stuff you've got to offer our listeners, tell us about your story, just quick review of what brought you to where you are today, being an expert on teen moms and parenting issue, teen moms? Hello, that came out wrong. Teens and moms. That's what I mean, teens and moms. How did you get there?
Okay, so my story started when I was a teenager. Obviously, you know, all three of us were teen girls at one point. And it was a struggle, as you know, the both of you probably remember thinking back then how much support you needed. Maybe you got it, maybe you did not. And so I just remember those times as being so emotional and thinking, I just wish somebody understood me and somebody could support me through this and give me some good ideas on how to deal with some of these things. So that's when my story started on this journey. I remember as a young kid, actually at 8, thinking I wanted to be a therapist, which is kind of crazy that I ended up, you know, in this field. So fast forward, I went to school for my master's degree in counseling psychology and started in the field of neuropsychology research, which I felt was super exciting, always in pediatrics. Like every paper I could do was pediatrics. And then, you know, fast forward again to a job that I got with the Women's Sports Foundation that was, it was about a curriculum for girls ages 8 to 18. And that's when I knew, yes, this is what I need to be doing, specifically helping girls that are ages, you know, about 8 to 18 when they're going through so many transformations. And after that job ended, I knew I had to stay in this space. And so I started TeenWise. I thought, this is what I was meant to do. And as I started working with teens and tween girls, I realized that the moms also needed support because there's so many emotions that come up when you're parenting a daughter. It takes you back to your own teen years. And so that's why I'm in this space I am, and I absolutely love it. It's definitely a passion of mine.
So well, cool. I think it's a space where you'll never run out of clients, right? Because we're always going to have a steady stream of teen girls, and they're always going to be experiencing those challenges that we experienced ourselves, right?
Right. And now I have, you know, as an adult, I had kids. So my kids now are 18, 21, and 23. And I just saw all the things that they went through and their friends went through. So that gave me a whole nother, you know, way to learn about parenting teen girls.
Absolutely.
But so that was your, I was going to ask, that was your area of expertise and your specialty and your focus even before you had teenage daughters. Is that right?
No, I guess it was about the same time. Let me think about this. I guess they weren't teens yet. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I had daughters, but they weren't teens yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you talk about the importance of moms upping their game. Right. Yeah. By being informed and prepared and calm. And so help our listeners who have a teen daughter or two or three see inside their daughter's minds. What's the science in the teenage brain?
Oh, there's so much there. So the biggest thing that is going on for our girls specifically is when they hit puberty, the oxytocin kicks in, but it's a bonding chemical. And when our kids are young, that bonding is all about us as parents. Like when you breastfeed, oxytocin is released and you bond, right? When they get to around middle school, that oxytocin bonding chemical is more for their friends. And that becomes a really strong drive, their friendships. And they're hopefully still bonded to you, but they're seeking other ways to live in the world without you. So they're individuating, and all the chemicals running through their body says, you know, my parents are not the people I want to connect to right now. It's friends, the social groups. So that's why you see these social issues become so big for your kids, because it's their life.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, it's so interesting that you say that. So, I'm a counselor as well as a psychologist, right? So when I see teen girls struggling with wanting more friends, it's very difficult to understand, why do you care so much about quantity over quality? And so does that help explain why they feel like they need so many friends and they're not just satisfied with one or two good friends?
Well, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that, right? Some people can be satisfied with two friends. They have really close bonds, and those are mostly introverts. They don't care about the number of friends. They want, you know, somebody close. But there's also this era of social media where it seems to matter so much more how many friends you have, because it's out there for everybody to see. Like when I'm doing coaching sessions with girls, a lot of times they'll tell me their Snapchat scores, or they'll tell me how many streaks they have, or how many likes they got on something, because that's so important. But it's this numerical thing on popularity, on friendship, that we didn't really have growing up, but now they do, unfortunately.
So they've got this combination of the oxytocin drive, but also the dopamine release that they get from all those likes and friends, right?
And even just a ding from their cell phone, right? If it's a text or something, it doesn't even matter what's on the other end. Just every ding, every like, every interaction, a Snapchat or something, a snap means, hey, somebody's thinking about me. I am connected to somebody, even if it's very superficial on the other end.
Goodness. Yeah. I mean, it seems so much more complicated than it was when we were growing up.
Yeah.
I mean, just, yeah, that struggle for acceptance and relationship and friendship, so much more complicated with social media now.
Yeah. Well, before, when you would leave school or leave soccer, whatever you were doing, and went home, you had a reprieve from the social comparisons, from worrying about the interactions, but now it's 24/7. So even if your child doesn't have a cell phone in their bedroom, they pick it up in the morning and all of this social stuff has happened while they weren't on their phone. So there's just no reprieve from it. And our brains aren't wired to constantly be in this social mode. There's supposed to be downtime, but our kids really don't have it as much.
Goodness. Yeah. So how can we use this information now as moms? How can we use this information to better relate to our teen daughters, to better communicate?
Mm-hmm. So one of the pieces is understanding. If we can understand where they're coming from, why they are reacting as they are, why they're so emotional about what's going on, then we can keep ourselves calm and we can support them through it better. Because if we get in there in the emotional fray and we're getting all worked up about social issues that are going on, or if we don't understand and we're just flippant about the issues that are going through, then our kids are going to disconnect from us, think that we don't understand them, and not want to come to us and talk about things. So really we don't need to fix things. We just need to be there for them, to support them and understand them. That's what they need from us about 99% of the time.
So can you give moms specific language that they can use to show their daughters, hey, I want to understand your perspective. I want to see your side. I want to know where you're coming from.
Right.
Yeah. First of all, we can start out with not saying anything. If our kids come to us, just listen, and don't listen to speak. Just listen to be there and to let them vent. So many times, us as moms especially, try to get into that fix it mode. So we're thinking while they're talking, oh, what can I ask next? How can I fix this? And so we completely look over the emotions that are behind it, what our daughter's going through. And instead we're jumping over to the fix it part of the relationship. So we can let that fix it go, realize you don't need to fix it and that you just need to talk to them. So the language you can use is, oh, that must be tough. Or I hear that your day was hard, things like that, instead of you need to do this, you need to do that, because that's what a lot of girls tell me. I don't want to talk to my parents because they just have this lecture for me. They think it's so easy. They don't understand. So yeah. Really less words.
Do you encourage moms to say after that, mm-hmm. how can I help? Or is there anything you need from me? Or do you just recommend that they sit in that space with their daughters?
So when they first come to you, the first thing you say is, do you want me to just listen or do you want advice? That's the best way to start it. And oftentimes I'll say, I just want you to listen, but it gives them control over the space. So you can listen, and then at the end, you can say the same thing again. Do you want me to just listen more? Do you want some advice? A lot of times they'll say, no, I don't want the advice. But you've opened that door to say, I'm here for you and I have some ideas. So many times they'll come back to you maybe in 24 hours, maybe the next week. But you've said to them, I'm here to listen. I'm here to do what you need me to do. But I do have some advice if you want it.
Yeah, that's good. Asking if they want you to give it. That's good. Yeah, like asking exactly. permission.
Because when you just start in with advice, it's annoying to our teens. They're like, no, I can handle this. I just need you to listen. But they might need some advice. But when you make it, empower them to say yes or no to it, then it's a whole different way they receive it.
So good.
Yeah.
Well, so tell us about different changes that happen as girls are maturing. Even going from those preteen to middle school years. Tell us a little bit about some of those changes that girls are going through.
Mm-hmm. So there's so many different ways we could talk about the changes they're going through, but let's talk about friendships a little bit more, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. So one of the big changes that they're going through is their friendships change. In elementary school, it's like, who's sitting next to you in class? Who do your parents like? And who's over at the house? But when it gets to middle school, there's a lot of friendship shifts. And it's very confusing for girls, because sometimes one of the girls in a friendship's like, hey, I want to keep this friendship going forever, BFFs, right? And the other friend is like, oh, I don't really like the things that she likes anymore. Or, I don't want to hang out with her because she isn't into boys like I am, or she doesn't she still wants to play with My Little Ponies and I'm not interested in that. So there's a bunch of natural shifts that happen, and that's very confusing, because if we go back to the oxytocin, they need to bond, and social hierarchies are extremely important to them, social bonds. So that's very confusing for our girls. So that's a really big shift that happens in those middle school years. And then when they go from middle school to high school and they're changing schools, maybe social groups, that's another time of a lot of confusion.
I've noticed that, with my own daughters. As you're talking, I'm remembering back. So my oldest daughter is 27 and my youngest daughter is 9. And so I've kind of got, the wide spectrum, but I'm remembering back to, my daughter that was 21, and just remembering how she went through those changes. Like, she had these good friends in middle school from just some certain activities that we were in, like fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh. And then there was, like you said, there was this shift, and then we'd see this friend at the grocery store, and she would walk past and not acknowledge the person.
Right.
Wait, weren't y'all really, really good buddies? Right. And she's like, yeah, we don't really talk to each other anymore. we don't have any classes together. It was like once there's this break, 9 months goes by and it's as if they never knew one another.
Right.
Yeah. And so do you see that?
I do. And it's confusing for us as moms. Like so many times, especially if you're friends with the friend's mom or something, it's like, why aren't you friends with them? Go talk to them. And we feel a loss too, because so many times we were there for this little kid when they were like fourth graders, fifth graders. So we saw them growing up. So we have a bond with them as well. So it's so hard to let go, but we definitely have to, you know, let our kids determine who they're friends with, and we can deal with our own feelings around it. But it's good in those situations just to ask questions of, hey, what happened? You know, was there any reason you stopped being friends? And sometimes there was a rift, and sometimes it's just like your daughter said, I don't have classes with her anymore.
Yeah, just kind of grew apart. And then and I think I have to remind myself too, I'm doing it so much better with my 13-year-old daughter than I did with my older daughters, because, you know, I'm learning.
Right.
But I have to remind myself that for me, 9 months is a blip. I mean, that a school year, it comes and goes. It's so fast. And I have to remember for my daughter, an entire school year, that is a lifetime. I mean, that is the life and death of multiple friendships.
Yes, it is. And it's, you know, especially with this last year, there's like a time warp going on, and the friendships got really difficult during this past year. But yeah, 9 months seems like forever and teen years.
So I actually want to piggyback on that idea. We're seeing this huge surge in social anxiety in teens because of the pandemic, right? It's almost like they lost their social skills by not being in person with their friends all day, every day. And so what advice do you have for moms of teen girls who are struggling to re-engage in those relationships or to make new friends? Those who are experiencing social anxiety, oh, I feel awkward, or I'm afraid that that person will think that I'm weird if I go up and talk to them. What advice can you give them?
Yeah. So for those kids, especially who are a little bit shyer, and we've got a lot more of those because of the pandemic right now, the advice is to come up with a friendship plan. We always have this idea that friendships come naturally. You shouldn't have to work for it, but it's kind of like dating. Sometimes you got to put yourself out there in order to have that relationship. So what I'll do with girls who come in to me and say, you know, the parents, like, they don't have friends, what do? We come up with this plan, and we talk about the friendship triangle and the fact that you start out with acquaintances, and those people can move up to closer friends or good friends, and then they move up to BFF, so that it's not this automatic, you meet somebody and then they're your BFF. That happens in elementary school, but not so much in middle high school. So we talk to them about those friendships and how they shift. And then we ask, where do you, like, is there anybody in the acquaintance area right now that you would love to get closer to? And then you talk about how you do that. And you do that by talking to people. So you get specific about, you know, what class are some people in that you might want to be good friends with? What are some things you could talk to them about? So I come up with a list of questions with them or things to talk about, so that in those awkward moments when they're sitting around the classroom table, they have some things they can kind of pull out of their tool belt and say, hey, you know, last weekend I went to this concert. What did you do? Or I watched this movie. Have you seen it? Small little conversation points that make it easier. And then talk to them about the fact that that person can talk to you or not talk to you, and it means nothing about your self-worth or nothing about you as a person. It's all about what they're going through, but you got to put yourself out there.
Oh, that's such a big one. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, and I think that advice can translate to adults as well. I mean, how many times have you gone to a professional conference, not known anyone in the room? There's these awkward silences as you sit around a table, or you have to do some group activity where you don't know them. And so, you know, to be able to have a toolbox of, you know, potential conversation starters.
Right. And I'm valuable. I'm a shy girl. So for me, I definitely do that when I go to conferences. I think about what are the main things I can talk to people about. And if I just have one thing to start a conversation, you know, maybe that's not even what we continue talking about, but it releases that pressure of thinking in the moment, right?
Absolutely.
We talk a lot. I talk a lot with all of my kids, like a big thing. I mean, even in the mornings before they're heading to school or, you know, heading into certain activities, I talk a lot about just try to be a friend. Let's try to be a friend today instead of looking for a friend. And so, you know, oh, this, I know it's this new youth group activity. And so, yeah, remember, you know, you're going to want to go in there and be looking for who's going to be your friend, and you're going to want them to act towards you, but act towards them, be a friend to them. So that, that has helped, but it's all that, it's everything that you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this idea. A lot of times girls will feel, or boys too, will feel like, why doesn't anybody want to be my friend? Like you're saying. And when you can get out of that mindset and say, hey, I have the power to talk to people. I don't need to wait for them to come to me. It's a huge transformation. There was one girl I was working with before the school year started, and you know, lots of social anxiety. And she had started middle school during the pandemic. So there was all this, you know, weird stuff going on then, right? But when she was able to shift the mindset to she could be the first one to talk, the first one to reach out, it changed the way she was looking at friendships, that she didn't have to sit around and wait for someone to talk to her.
Yes.
So you're talking a lot about friendships right now. Now, I poked around at the information you have on your website and blog posts and podcasts, and you've got so much information out there. You've got YouTube videos, just really great information for parents. And I did kind of latch on to this new thing that you're, I don't know if it's new actually, but it's, I think it was a webinar re-recording, mm-hmm. Inner Joy. And so talk to us about inner joy. And that is a lot more than just friendships, but that webinar and the information you want to give moms and teens on finding that inner joy.
That's one of my favorite topics, because right now I feel like this generation coming up is so focused on the end goal, which is college. It shouldn't be for everybody, but that's what society's gone to. Everybody needs to go to college. And that means that we start at a very young age, even preschool, of focusing on what does my kid need to do to get into a quote good top college. And in that endeavor to be the best, the brightest, achieve the most, our kids have lost the joy in the process. So instead of thinking of the here and now, why am I in soccer? Why am I in karate? Why am I trying to learn chemistry? And feeling the joy of that, it's all this rat race to get to the end. And we as parents have to find a way to bring joy back into the lives of our kids, into our households. So letting go of that rat race is our job as parents, and focusing on the joy instead. A lot of parents push back on me. They're like, but what about college? You know, I can't just let my kid do what they love because maybe that's not going to get them into college. And I say, the love and excitement is what will make them successful, not what college they go to, or even if they go to college.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. And I know that that's a huge struggle. I'm a boy mom, not a girl mom. But I see the same thing, you know, with boys as well, and maybe even more so. But absolutely.
Yeah. It's a struggle. And it is hard because we as parents get into this parent pressure trap where we feel like, oh my gosh, we need to do that extra tutoring, extra coaching, extra everything to make sure our kids achieve and don't miss any opportunities.
And I think it sneaks up on us, or that was my experience and other, you know, friends I have, maybe it does even more so with daughters. I don't know why, but that perspective of, oh, what are you going to do? You know, after this, where do you want to go to college? What do you, you know, what's your career goals? Kind of, I felt like it snuck up on me more than it did with my sons, to where, you know, oh, everything's fun. They're in middle school. It's just, you know, no worries. And then all of a sudden high school, and it's, you know, sophomore year. Oh, we got to make a decision. Come on. Right. What are you going to do? What do you care about? What's your focus? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can think back to my older daughters and when that shift happened, that it was almost this like frantic urgency and this stress. Right. You got to make a decision. And there was no inner joy. That inner joy just got flushed.
Right. Right. It is so true. And I think if you're a mom parenting a daughter, you feel differently, that it's this responsibility for you to make sure that your daughter is self-sufficient, that she's bucking the norms, that, you know, she's going to be the shining light, right, of feminism. And the boys, we definitely have the pressure for the boys too. It just feels a little bit different. If you're mom parenting boys, it manifests itself differently, but it's still there.
And I think the crazy thing is, at 14 or 15, most kids don't know what they want to do with the rest of their lives.
Right.
Very few kids have that path already set in stone and actually follow it. Right. And so to put that kind of pressure and have that kind of expectation is completely unrealistic.
Yes.
How did we get here?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it goes even younger than that at 10 and 11, maybe it's the area I am in, but they feel like they need to have their passion. The parents feel like their kids need to have their passion. And I see a lot of parents, if their kids are in something at age 11 and they want to quit, they're like, no, you can't quit because you need to stick in there for college because it'll look good for college. So we have to just let our kids be kids and they don't have to have it all figured out. Like my youngest daughter just started her freshman year in college and she's already changed her major. And I'm like, that's great. You know, you're figuring out what you want to do. Change it as many times as you need to. You're there to explore and figure out who you are and what you want to do.
Oh, I love that. There to explore and figure it out instead of you're there. So you better know ahead of time what you're going to do.
Exactly.
Oh, Sherry, that's so good. Listeners, did you hear that? You're there to explore and learn. Yes.
Yeah. And we can rewind, and that's how it should be throughout their entire childhood. They don't have to have it figured out. Our job is to give them opportunities to explore and to learn who they are and to, you know, have room for personal growth and for us to just be along the journey with them.
So along those lines of exploring, I'm seeing a trend of kids taking a gap year. Between high school and college. What are your thoughts on that? What are the benefits of doing that? But what also do you think are the risks of doing that?
I think the benefits way outweigh the risk. There are so many kids who get to college who are burned out and they don't even know why they are there. I think there's I don't remember what the stat is. I'm going to throw this out. It's something like 30% of freshmen drop out because they are burned out and they are like, I worked for so many years to get here. This is what everybody said I needed to do. And I don't even know what I'm doing. So the gap year gives them an opportunity to want to go back to school, that they go out, they experience the world, they mature another year, they gain some independence, and they don't feel like they have to go to college. And it's a choice. And having a choice in life is so powerful when you feel like you're choosing something versus you have to do something. I'll tell you a story about my oldest daughter. When she was heading off to college, she kept saying, I have to, I have to. Finally, one day I said, you don't have to go to college. In fact, if you keep wording it like that, we're going to postpone this for a while until you decide that you want to go. And after that conversation, she never used that wording again because she realized, I don't have to go. This is a privilege. I get to choose this.
That's so good. Ooh, I love that.
So should parents bankroll the gap year, or do we need to encourage our kids to work in the gap year? What does that ideal gap year look like?
That's something that is personal for every family. And it really depends on your child too. If you feel like they really need to get a work ethic that if you just hand it to them, that they're not going to learn as much, then you can say, yes, I will give you a starter fund here, but you need to finance your own gap year. But there are advantages to having them just go out and explore too. But I think that it's just a personal choice of how you do it. But I do think the one key thing in this gap year idea is that the kid needs to plan it, not the parents. There is no way if your kid says they want a gap year that you should be researching it, giving them their options. The whole idea of a gap year is to gain independence. And so they need to do that.
Great advice.
I think too, it's good to, to realize that that gap year can happen a year or two into college.
Absolutely.
I've got a kiddo overseas right now, and she went to college for a little bit and, you know, was kind of floundering. I don't really know what I want to do. And so we tried to be like, that's okay. You don't have to know. And yeah, she's been in France and Italy and
amazing. Yeah. And then when and if she decides to go back to college, then it's a whole different world. Then she's choosing and she has an idea, a better idea of what she wants to do. Yeah. So many kids go straight into college, get a degree, and they're like, I hate this, you know, but they feel like now they're stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And the world has become so much more accessible. Yes. There's so many great programs out there, like what my daughter's doing. I think it's called Workaway and free room and board. So it's not like she's not like traveling Europe.
Yeah.
You know, thousands of dollars. No, she's working. She's working at different farms. You know, it's a certain place, a vineyard for 3 weeks, and then, you know, a coffee farm. And, you know, she's at different places where it's not costing a ton of money. Of course, the flights back and forth, you know, she had to save up for. Yeah. But I think there's lots of things like that across the country right now.
Definitely.
For our daughters to explore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, you know, another thing that you're talking about pros and cons of this gap year, some parents get really scared that their kids will never go back to college. And that may be the case, but they're going to find themselves along the way, which is the most important thing. Some people are very successful without college, definitely makes it easier in some ways. But my guess is those kids will eventually find their way back, but they'll be much more focused and get a lot more joy out of it.
Yeah. They won't just be wasting time and money.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you talk a little bit about a phenomenon that happens between mothers and teen daughters where daughters stop talking to their parents.
Yes.
So tell us why that is and what moms can do about it.
Yeah, there's some. I just got done with a 5-day challenge talking about this. I'm breaking the silence. It's a really, there's a lot behind it. I'm not going to go the neuropsychology route on this. I'm just going to talk about, you know, the facts and bring it down to the everyday level. So a lot of times girls stop talking to their parents, boys too, because number one, the parents try to fix it. Like we've already talked about that every time they come to their mom or their dad, it's all about, here's what you need to do. Here's what you did wrong. You need to fix it. And there's an expectation there also that they're going to follow through with whatever advice the parent gives. And then there is kind of a shame and guilt that is paired with that if they don't follow through with the advice. So that's a piece of it. The lectures. The kids I talk to are like, oh my gosh, I don't want to hear that lecture one more time. And they can like recite their parents' top 3 lectures that they're going to get. And they say when the lectures start, they just tune out. They may be looking at their parents, but they're like, I did not want to hear this. So they stop going because they don't want to hear the lectures. Those are really 2 big things that get in the way. And then I wouldn't say the third. Another, trying to think which one, because we can talk about this forever. But I think let's stick with those 2. Those are really the 2 big things. And if you can be mindful of those 2 things, that will make a big change in whether or not your daughter keeps coming to you. Let me add one more in there. The judgment. That's a big piece too.
Okay. That parents tend to judge, that the mom tends to judge the teenage daughter. Tell more about that. What do you mean?
Yes. So again, it goes back to this mom-daughter dynamic. So we see ourselves in our daughters. And so we expect them to act a certain way, do certain things. And there's this other weird thing that happens is we want our daughters to be the person we were not when we were teens, that we wish we were. So standing up for ourselves, standing up for others, talking to the teachers, working harder in school. You know, name your list of things that you wish you had done better as a teen. And a lot of times you're trying to steer your daughter to do those things. So the judgment comes in there. You're kind of judging yourself, but really it's going on to your daughter.
Oh, that's hard.
Do you think that's driven by mistakes that moms think they made as a teen and the shame that came along with those mistakes, and they just don't want to see that pain?
Yes. So, it's about, like, you don't want them to make the mistakes that you made. That's part of it. But also it's, yeah, as we age, we learn how to speak up for ourselves, for instance. And so we expect our daughters to have that ability when they're in middle school, because we can see it so clearly. It's so easy. Just say this, just do that. But they have their own journeys. They have to, you know, have the years under their belt that we have before they can be like that.
Do you feel like it's beneficial for moms to share parts of their own journey? Like, how much of their mistakes in their past and their teenage years should they disclose, you know, with the hopes of, hey, I don't want you to make the same mistakes I made? Is that beneficial, or would you recommend not disclosing those mistakes to your daughters?
It's not that you shouldn't talk about your own life growing up, but what I hear from the teens is it's not about my parents, and they're always making it about them. So while we're trying to share in the hopes of connecting and saying, I get it, I went through this, if we talk about it too much, then we lose our kids in it, because they're like, oh my gosh, it's another story for mom or dad about what they went through. So they're not seeing that as a connection point. And the other thing I would caution parents about is sharing stories about partying early on, doing drugs, smoking, vaping, having sex very early on, because whether we like it or not, our kids don't always hear it as a cautionary tale. They hear it as, okay, this is now allowed because my parents did it. How can they possibly say I can't, because they didn't?
Or they see your parent as, oh, well, they turned out okay, even though they did this, right?
So, Yeah, we're role models. So even though, again, if we're trying to say it as learn from my mistake, here's a cautionary tale. They're like, oh, mom did that. I'm going to try it.
Yeah. Oh, that's very important. Mm-hmm. I think the opposite is probably true also. Like, you know, trying to be some self-righteous, well, I was never allowed to behave that way. I wouldn't have done that. You know, that, yeah, it seems like either of those extremes just, it's just going to drive our kids away.
Well, when my daughters have asked me point blank, did you do X, Y, Z? I'll say, you know, those are choices that I made, and that was my journey. And I want you to make your own choices for yourself.
Ooh, good answer. I like that.
So can you talk a little bit about limits and curfews and how, I know that's got to be a frustration point for teenage daughters, right? That they don't feel like they have enough freedom. And so how do you find the sweet spot with your teenage daughters?
Well, one thing I just want to be clear about is that we do have to set limits for our teens. So many times we have this idea that when we talk about collaborating with our teens, that means they get to make all the choices. But no, the choices are within these guardrails. Here's your choices, right? So I just want to be clear about that. Now, having said that, we can collaborate with our kids to figure out what those limits are, whether we're talking about social media, screen time, curfews, driving, hanging with their friends. We can get them in on the decisions so that they feel empowered. So when it comes to curfew, that's a great example. Say, okay, you know, I think your curfew should be 10 o'clock right now. What are your thoughts? And then you can have it back and forth. Surprisingly, a lot of times they'll say, yeah, that sounds good, when you're like ready for this big fight. Now, the key to getting them to continue talking to you about it is to be flexible. So if your child calls you and says, hey, I'm hanging out with my friends, we're watching a movie, there's 30 minutes left, and it's already nearing their curfew, you have a choice. You know, are you going to say yes, or are you going to say no? Being flexible in that moment allows you to continue to have this boundary and this limit respected.
That's good, because that feels counterintuitive. Hearing that, it seems like, no, if it's going to be respected, they should respect it every time. Yeah. And yet from the heart, I can, when you say that, I'm like, oh yeah, relationally, that's mm-hmm. much more effective.
Right.
Because we all need that flexibility. We all mm-hmm. things come up, and yeah, we all need that in every relationship.
Well, and I always say that we should parent through a lens of connection. And so every choice that we make, we need to ask ourselves, is this going to strengthen the connection with my child, or is this going to weaken the connection with my child? And if your daughter calls you and says, there's 30 minutes of this movie left, I know it's going to make me 30 minutes past my curfew, but can I stay? And you say, no, your curfew is your curfew, then you yeah. automatically have weakened that connection, right?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, I mean, what is the benefit of not yeah. letting them mm-hmm. watch the last 30 minutes of a movie that they're engaged in versus
yeah.
what's the consequence of making them?
Yeah.
Right.
The
right.
consequence to your relationship.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, and even if you need to say no for whatever reason, right? That there's a kind of an explanation there instead of just a flat out no. Like you might need to say no because you're taking the SAT tomorrow and you need to get your sleep, or we have an early flight. Who knows what the reason is? But if it's just a flat no, your curfew was this time, then they're not going to call you next time. Probably they're just going to be late.
Yeah. It seems like it's putting the rule over the relationship.
Yes.
And it needs to always be the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. But there are times when you do have to say no. We all know that as parents. And so like you're talking about the connection versus the rule. Absolutely. We need to keep that in mind. But sometimes you have to make the hard decisions and say no. That doesn't mean you're disconnecting. It depends on how that conversation goes down.
It's good.
It's funny to watch my kids. I very rarely say no because I find that most things are negotiable, right? And so when I do say no, the look on their face, oh, she's serious, because yeah. she rarely says no. I need to listen. There must be a really good reason.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
So we need to take a quick break and let Terry read a word from our sponsor, LearningRx, and then we'll come back and keep talking.
Are you concerned about your child's reading or spelling performance? Are you worried your child's reading curriculum isn't thorough enough? Well, most learning struggles aren't the results of poor curriculum or instruction. They're typically caused by having cognitive skills that need to be strengthened. Skills like auditory processing, memory, and processing speed. LearningRx one-on-one brain training programs are designed to target and strengthen the skills that we rely on for reading, spelling, writing, and learning. LearningRx can help you identify which skills may be keeping your child from performing their best. In fact, they've worked with more than 100,000 children and adults who wanted to think and perform better. They'd like to help get your child on the path to a brighter and more confident future. Give LearningRx a call at 866-BRAIN-01 or visit learningrx.com. That's learningrx.com.
And we're back talking to Coach Sherry Gazit about parenting teen girls. So Sherry, you have a free e-course for parents on helping them find their teens' love languages. Talk to us about why it's important that we know what our teens' love language is.
Well, right now they're discovering what their love language is. So we have to be fluent in all of the love languages. But it's not just saying I love you to your teen to show them that you love them. You've got to figure out how they're willing to receive it. And that's the importance of the love languages. So in this e-course, I talk about why it's difficult to show love to our teens, because going through all five of the different love languages, each one has its point of frustration for our teens and for the parents. So we have to explore those love languages, try them all out with our teens, see what resonates with them, see what works in that moment. And then we have a different way to say, I love you, because we can say, I love you all day, but that's not the important piece for our teens. They feel like you're my mom, you're my dad, you gotta say that. But we have to show them our love, and it has to be in a way that they want it to be shown.
So can you give our listeners an example of what that frustration looks like if a parent's using a love language that isn't mm-hmm. what the teen is receptive to?
Right. I'll give you the one that's probably the most frequently felt by parents, and that's physical affection. So when our kids are little, most kids, not all, want those hugs and kisses and snuggles, and they hit middle school and sometimes there's a hard stop on that physical affection. They don't want you to touch them on the shoulder. They don't want any sort of physical affection. So that's one piece that's really difficult for parents, because it really feels hurtful, right? When they say, I don't want you to hug me, they push you away. But even with that, with physical affection, that may still be your teen's love language, but there's a lot of factors into why they don't want to be touched anymore. Their bodies are going through a lot of changes. They're uncomfortable with it, or they're individuating from you. But you can still fit it in, but you've got to figure out what that is for your teen. One mom that I was talking to, the way she showed love physically with her daughter was they used to do the heart thing like this. And so even across the room, they would kind of do that. And that would be their physical, even if they weren't touching. With one of my daughters, she had the hard stop on physical affection. So we came up with the pinky touch. So that would be how I would still be able to give her physical affection, just, you know, if she would allow me to have a pinky touch.
Sweet.
For those of you who couldn't see, Coach Sherry was making the heart shape with her hands.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, listeners are like, doing what? What were they doing?
Right. Yeah, my daughter, who's a freshman in college, we FaceTime a lot, and that we still do that over the phone.
That's so sweet. One of my girls reached a point, and it's just like you said, she reached a point where even though we had been, you know, super affectionate, and I mean, like as a child, she was very clingy with me, and then she reached this point, you know, in, you know, like middle school, high school, and she didn't want to be touched anymore and didn't want to be hugged, didn't want to be, you know, don't rub my arm, you know, whatever. But a way I was able to maintain connection is I would play with her hair. I would braid her hair or brush her hair or do, you know, pigtails or whatever. And that felt, she liked it. That felt really, really nice. And so I was able to still get that sweet connection and affection. And man, I'd braid her hair and she'd take it out and say, braid it again, mommy. And I'm like, okay, yeah.
You're right. And it's really hard when they're hugging their friends and everybody else and not you. You're like, oh, I'm so sad. But
yeah,
this is the way they change.
Yeah.
Well, when we look at the research on the importance of physical touch, and so our kids need it, our teens need it. And so that's hard, you know, to know that your kid, if they don't have a boyfriend or girlfriend, for those of us who are boy moms, right? If they're not getting physical touch somehow during the day, I mean, it's kind of heartbreaking to think my kid won't let me hug him or my kid won't let me hug her. And I know that she needs that, but
yeah,
it's a phase.
Yeah. That's where pets come into play.
That's good.
That's important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, tell us about the support group that you've got called the Mom Wise Club. Tell our listeners about what moms can get out of joining that group.
Mm-hmm. So the Mom Wise Club came about because moms were asking me for more support. And I was like, I can't fit it in yet. But finally, this past year, I was able to start the Mom Wise Club right before the pandemic, actually. So I had to stop and pivot. And now it's all online, which is actually great because I can reach moms across the U.S. or across the world, really. So what it is it was started for moms with daughters in middle school. And then the high school mom said, please let us in. So expanded it to that. And now moms of boys have said, come on, let us in. So we're still kind of focused more on girls, but we're letting anybody in because we know that moms really need support. So what I do is I drop a video every week with a small challenge. So it's like a 5-minute video and focusing on teen issues, on parenting, on being a mom. And I'm just there to support the group. We also bring in experts every month to talk about a certain issue at hand. And it's a great place to be able to share about what's going on. Because there's a bug on me. When our kids are little, we talk about nap time and feeding time. And, you know, it's those kinds of issues. But when it comes to middle school and high school, the issues are very personal. So we have to be careful about what we're sharing.
Yeah. It changes a lot.
yes, a lot.
Yeah.
So you also have a coaching program. What does that look like? And how can moms find out more if they want to work with you?
Yeah. So the MomWise Club is momwise.club, by the way. And that's a group coaching program, but I also have private coaching. And if anybody's interested in that, they can email me or go to my website, teenwiseseattle.com, to get more information. But I basically work one-on-one with people to either help their teens. So I work with the teens, but parents are part of that process, or I work straight with the parents so that they can come up with different parents, teen strategies, understand their kids better, and I can just be there as a support system.
Okay.
Very good. Is there anything that you haven't gotten to say that you want to leave our listeners with?
There's so much in this arena. I mean, I could talk for hours about this because I'm so passionate about it. But I would say the one thing that I want to leave everyone with is that we parent the best that we can. And there's going to be days where you don't feel great about the parenting that you've done that day, but don't beat yourself up because you're learning, your kids are learning, your kids don't need you to be perfect. They just need you to be present.
Oh, so good. Yes. Thank you. We all need to hear that. Thank you.
We do. So we are out of time and need to wrap up, but we really want to thank our guest today, Coach Sherry Gazit, for sharing your insights and your wisdom on raising teen girls. Everybody's making the heart shape with their hands. I have to tell you, so I have a motor planning delay, and it's very hard for me to do things like that unless I look at it first. So I have to look at my hands, make it, and then I can. Right. And so when my kid stands in my doorway and does that, I'm always like, let me look first and get on respond. So it's kind of embarrassing. Anyway, if you would like to learn more about Coach Sherry's coaching services, take advantage of her free love languages course, join her MomWise Club support group, you can visit teenwiseseattle.com. We'll put her social media handle at teenwiseseattle and links to all of this in our show notes. So thank you so much for listening today. If you liked our show, we would love it if you would leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you would rather watch us so you can see us do the heart shapes, we are on YouTube. And you can follow us on social media at The Brainy Moms. So look, until next time, we know that you're busy moms and we're busy moms. So we're out.
See ya.